वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्णा। Today we are reading from Canto 4, Chapter 20. Chapter 20 is entitled Lord Vishnu's Appearance in the Sacrificial Arena. And today we are on verse 37. Bhagavanapi Rajarshe Bhagavanapi Rajarshe सोपाध्यायस्य चाच्युतः सोपाध्यायस्य चाच्युतः हरन् इव मनोमुष्य हरन् इव मनोमुष्य स्वधाम प्रत्यप्रबध्यत स्वधाम प्रत्यपद्यत भगवानपि राजर्षे सोपाध्यायस्य चाच्युतः हरन् इव मनोमुष्य स्वधाम प्रत्यपद्यत भगवानपि राजर्षे सोपाध्यायस्य चाच्युतः हरन् इव मनोमुष्य स्वधाम प्रत्यपद्यत Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Api, also Rajarishi, of the saintly king, Sa Upadhyayasya, along with all the priests, Cha, also Achyuta, the infallible Lord, Haran, captivating, Eva, indeed, Manaha, the mind, Amushya, of him, Swadhama, to his abode, Pratyapadyata, returned. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead, having captivated the minds of the king and the priests who were present, returned to his abode in the spiritual sky. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is all spiritual, he can descend from the spiritual sky without changing his body, and thus he is known as Achyuta or infallible. When a living entity falls down to the material world, however, he has to accept a material body, and therefore in his material embodiment he cannot be called Achyuta. Because he falls down from his real engagement in the service of the Lord, the living entity gets a material body to suffer or try to enjoy in the miserable conditions of life. Therefore, the falling living entity is Chyuta, whereas the Lord is Achyuta. The Lord was attractive for everyone, not only the king, but also the priestly order, who were very much addicted to the performance of Vedic rituals. Because the Lord is all attractive, he is called Krishna, or one who attracts everyone. The Lord appeared in the sacrificial arena of Maharaj Prithu as Shirodakshai Vishnu, who is a plenary expansion of Lord Krishna. He is the second incarnation from Shirodakshai Vishnu, who is the origin of material creation and who expands as Garbhodakshai Vishnu, who then enters into each and every universe. Kshirodakshayi Vishnu is one of the Purushas who control the modes, the material modes of nature. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtham Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitya Nanda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we are almost at the conclusion of chapter 20. This whole pastime, the whole section of Lord Vishnu appearing in the sacrificial arena is coming to an end. Tomorrow the chapter will end. So this is the second last verse of this chapter. So I'm just setting a little bit of context about Canto 4 before we delve into today's verse. So Canto 4 has 31 chapters. And the first seven chapters of Canto 4 actually focus on what is real sacrifice or what is real dharma. And we see it starts with King Daksha, who is one of the Prajapatis, who is one of the sons of Brahma. He is about to perform a sacrifice, but then the sacrifice is not completed properly because Daksha commits a very big aparad to one of the greatest devotees of Lord Krishna, who is Lord Shiva. So then that whole section culminates into a teaching, which the Srimad Bhagavatam time and again keeps repeating, is how not to commit Vaishnava aparad. So the whole theme of the first seven chapters is to establish the supreme position of Lord Shiva as a Vaishnava, Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu, and also to establish the repercussions of committing a Vaishnava aparad, and what all punishment Daksha had to undergo because he did such a grave aparad. Then the next six chapters focus on the theme of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Akama Sarva Kamova Moksha Kama Udaridhi. Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purushamparam. So the next six chapters are about Dhru Maharaj. And that whole pastime establishes that whatever desire you have, whether you have a desire, akama sarva kamova, whether we have desire for revelation, whether we have desire for material enjoyment, or there is a desire to merge with the Lord, akama, or you don't have any desires at all. Whatever your desire may be, come and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the next six chapters establish that principle, akama sarva kamava, how the Lord is merciful, even if someone approaches him with full desires. And it also establishes the principle of tivra bhakti. So Dhru Maharaj is an example. He's an example which ideally all practicing devotees can follow. When we were studying that section with Kesho Prabhu, the whole theme that came out through the commentaries of even the acharyas was how to become serious in your devotional life. So Dhru Maharaj took the instructions of his guru very seriously, and then he did such tivra bhakti that the Lord himself appeared in front of him. So the next six chapters of fourth canto dwell on these two themes, akama sarva kamava, and how to do tivra bhakti so that you can go back to Godhead even in a short time. After that, the next 10 chapters describe what is Varnashram Dharma and what is ideal leadership or ideal Kshatriya Dharma. So we see the next 10 chapters start with the pastime of Maharaj Anga and how Maharaj Anga was trying to perform sacrifices, but none of the demigods were accepting their sacrificial share. So Maharaj Anga was a very pious king. He was doing everything right. He had the right ingredients. The right priests were doing the yajna. But still, the demigods weren't accepting the sacrifices. And one of the acharyas comments that the demigods actually raise their uttariya, their upper cloth, and they show Maharaj Anga that, look at our abdomen. Our belly skin is touching our backbone. So we are so undernourished, there is nothing to eat in your kingdom. So then the whole pastime comes out of how Maharaj Anga did not have a son, and then he gets a son. But that son unfortunately turned out to be a demoniac son. He was King Vena. And then the Bhagavatam establishes that what is an ideal leadership, what an ideal king should do, and how an ideal king should not be. So King Vena represents almost what we see happening in Kali Yuga. He represents the current situation. He was absolutely not working in the interest of the citizens. He was not working in the interest. So Prabhupada stresses in his purports that there are two things which Kshatriyas have to definitely do. One is protecting the citizens, and the second one is guiding the citizens back. So not only material protection, but also spiritual protection. Guiding them back to the path of Godhead, on the path of Godhead. But King Vena was not doing both. So there were thieves, plunderers, all those things were happening. Like, he himself was like a thief and plunderer, plundering all the citizens. And he was completely against the worship of the Supreme Lord. He was telling all the citizens, worship me, I am your Supreme Lord. So this is what King Vena was doing. And then the whole pastime comes of how the sages and the priests got together and they killed him. Just by the power of mantras, they killed him. But then you need a king to rule the kingdom. So then the whole pastime progresses to show how Maharaj Prithu was born. So Maharaj Prithu is also called as a Yoniju. A Yonija means someone who was not born from a womb. So Maharaj Prithu's birth was very transcendental and it was very unique. He was born by churning the parts. The body parts of King Vena had been preserved, and what we call modern day cloning. So he was almost like a cloning that was done. Maharaj Prithu's birth. So Maharaj Prithu appears like this, and then we see that all the sages and all the citizens who are present there start glorifying him. He was a Shakti Avesha avatar of the Lord. But he was extremely humble. So he tells everyone that, why are you all glorifying me when I have not even started my activities? And he, you know, Prabhupada establishes in the purport over there that he actually says that what you all are glorifying me is something that I should aspire to be. And this is, you know, one lesson that devotees can derive. Because as devotees, especially in the community, we hear so much praises from other devotees. And sometimes those praises, especially, you know, for me, it might go to my head. But we learn from Maharaj Prithu. So he's saying that whatever you're praising me, I don't possess those qualities, but I should actually try and strive and get those qualities in me. So you're telling me what I should work towards. That is how he turns the praises of all the citizens and the sages who were praising him. So then, you know, the next 10 chapters dwell on Maharaj Prithu, how he then established, he actually leveled Mother Earth. There were lots of mountains and it wasn't a very good terrain to live. So he levels the entire earth. He develops civilization on the earth like an ideal king should do. He develops proper cities, villages, parks, all these kinds of things so that a proper civilization can take place. So that was Maharaj Prithu's contribution. Protecting the citizens spiritually as well as protecting the citizens materially. And then the remaining 8 chapters of this 4th canto, they describe the pastimes of Puranjana. So that's an allegory in the Srimad Bhagavatam of how Puranjana represents the material body, the 9 gates are there. So that whole pastime will come. And the pastime of the Pracheta, Spring Prachina Bharishat, all these pastimes will come. So they establish the supreme devotional position of Narad Muni, the next 7 chapters, 8 chapters, because Narad Muni is there in present in all these chapters trying to take these people back to Godhead. The Prachetas, Prachina Bharishad, he actually teaches to them, or he actually gives instructions to them about pure devotional service and how to go back to Godhead. So this is how broadly 4th canto is described. Now coming back to today's present verse. So Maharaj Prithu has completed 99 horse sacrifices. And we see in the previous chapters, he is about to do the 100 horse sacrifice, the Ashwamedha Yajna. But who gets restless when he starts performing the 100th horse sacrifice? None other than Lord Indra. And we see Lord Indra appears in the Srimad Bhagavatam time and again. And he always appears you know, this facet of his personality is always shown in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Even in the Govardhan Leela in the 10th canto, Indra appears. And he appears because he's the sacrifice meant for him was stopped by Krishna, and all the sacrifice was given to Govardhan. So again, he's envious. And then he does, we know the whole Govardhan pastime. He tries to destroy the village of Vrindavan and Krishna and his devotees, and how Krishna protects all the citizens. So again, in this section also, we see that he becomes very envious. And he's trying to, various ways and means, to stop that 100th horse sacrifice. And why is he doing that? Because King Indra was the only person in that universe at that time who had done 100 horse sacrifices. So we will dwell on that theme a little bit later of why Lord Vishnu was so pleased with Maharaj Prithu, and what is the quality of King Indra, what we learn from the qualities of King Indra. But before that, we will dwell a little bit on what Prabhupada talks about in today's verse. So in the purport, Prabhupada is talking about the word Achyuta. So he's saying that the Lord is Achyuta. Achyuta means infallible. In fact, I was just doing some research on folio. And in folio, it was written that the Achyuta Gotra was actually started. The founder of the Achyuta Gotra was Advaita Acharya's son. One of Advaita Acharya's son's name was Achyuta as well. And we know there is a Gotra called Achyuta Gotra. So he is the founder or the father of the Achyuta Gotra. And Prabhupada says, like when we visit some temples in India, you are asked about your Gotra. And Prabhupada says that if you don't know what your Gotra is, always say that you are Achyuta Gotra. Achyuta Gotra means that you belong to the Gotra of Lord Krishna. So that is how it started. And we see this word Achyuta appear in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as well. So Arjuna is saying, Senayor Ubayor Madhye Ratham Sthapaya Me Achyutaha. So he is also addressing the Lord as Achyuta. He is saying that, O Lord, you are infallible. And we are Achyuta, we are fallible because we fall down in this material world. So Prabhupada explains, Prabhupada says that the Lord is not bound by Maya. He is the controller of Maya, Maya Dhyakshena Prakriti. He is actually the controller of Maya. He does not become subjugated to Maya like the Mayavadis try to tell us. They say that, oh, when the Brahman comes into this world, they get subjugated by Maya, and that is why they take a form. And that is why the Mayavadis deny this form of Lord Krishna. And the Mayavadis, on the other hand, go to claim that we are God. And Prabhupada says that when we question them, that if you are God, why are you right now, you know, having teeth pain? Why do you have to go and answer nature's call? Why are you subject to all these things? And they say that, oh, we will soon realize our position as God. Once this Maya's covering goes away, then we will soon realize our position as being God. And again, Prabhupada says, then question them. That why is it that right now you are under the control of Maya? That means Maya is greater than you? And then they don't have an answer to this. So Prabhupada elaborates on this in many of his purports, this difference between Achyuta and Chyuta. So the Lord is Achyuta. The Lord chooses to come down to this material world. We see King Prithu's avatar also. He is a Yoniju. He does not have to take birth from somebody's womb. But a living entity who is Chyuta or who is fallible has to actually take birth, and it is explained in the Bhagavatam. How does a living entity take birth? So it says it's Karmana Daiva Netrena. Karmana Daiva Netrena means because of his past karmas, and also Daiva Netrena, because of higher, you know, like the super soul will guide the living entity to take birth in a particular womb based on what past karmas he has done. But the Lord is not like that. The Lord can come at his will. He is like the warden of the jail. He can come at his will and he can go out at his will. The fact that he is present in the jail, that does not mean he is a criminal. And he has been brought there because of some crime or because of the past karma or something like that. And even when the Lord appears, within the same birth, the Lord can choose to become big, small, change his forms as he wants. And we see this in the Dashavatar. We see when Matsya came, he came as a little form, but then he kept expanding his form. So if we ask the Mayavadis, how can we do that? We are Chyuta, we are fallible, can we do that? We can't, we are completely bound by the three modes of material nature. But the Lord is beyond them. So the Lord can change his form as he wants. In Matsya Avatar we see, in Varaha Avatar we see, he comes out as a little thumb, but then he assumes a gigantic form of a boar. So the Lord is completely out of these three modes of material nature. He is completely free to do what he wants. Swarat, we say, like, he's not at all bound by the three modes of material nature. So that is one theme which Prabhupada is trying to establish in the purports over here. The difference between Achyuta and Chyuta. So the living entities are, although they are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, they are part and parcel of the superior energy, but still they are Tatastha Shakti. Tatastha Shakti means they have the tendency to fall down. And that is why, especially people like us who are in this material world, we had a tendency to fall down. We chose not to serve Krishna, and that is why we are all over here trying to suffer, you know, enjoy with this material body or suffering our past karma. So the living entity is Tathashta Shakti, but the Lord is superior Shakti. He does not get subjugated by all these things. And therefore it is, you know, established that how the Lord is Achyuta. So now coming to also the fact that the Lord was very attractive, that is another theme which Prabhupada brings out in the purport. He says that the Lord was very attractive even to the priests who were so attached to the sacrifices. And that is because the Lord, Prabhupada brings out the point that the Lord's name is Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. So if we see, the Lord has what is called as primary names and secondary names. So secondary names are something like Achyuta or Brahman or Parabrahman. All these are the secondary names of Lord Krishna. And the primary names of Lord Krishna are based on his relationships, are based on his qualities and his relationships with others or his pastimes. So then the names like Damodar, for example. Damodar is based on the pastime that the Lord performed, where Lord Mother Yashoda was trying to tie him up. So that is why the name Damodar is there, based on the pastime he performed. Or Yashoda Nandan, or Sachi Suta, or Devaki Nandan, Nanda Dulal. All these names are considered the primary names of Lord Krishna. And out of all these names, the main name is Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. So why is he all attractive? He's all attractive because of the 64 qualities that he possesses in full. Aishwaryasya, Samagrasya, we know all the qualities that he possesses in full. Because of all these qualities that he possesses in full, he's not only attractive to the devotees, but he becomes attractive even to these priests or people who are not so much attached to devotional service to the Lord, or who haven't yet realized the importance of devotional service to the Lord. And that is what Prabhupada is trying to explain over here, that the priests were not so much on the path of pure bhakti like Maharaj Prithu was, but they were still very attracted because the Lord's form is so beautiful. He had come in his four-handed form, he had come with Garuda, and it is explained that, you know, the Lord's feet were almost touching the ground, his one hand was resting on Garuda, he had a lotus flower, beautiful lotus eye. So even the priests get attracted to this form. So what to speak of Maharaj Prithu? Maharaj Prithu was so attracted to the form that he could not even speak. So first, when Vishnu appears, he gives instructions to Maharaj Prithu. He talks about the science of self-realization, the pure devotion, the highest purpose of pure devotional service. He gives him all these instructions. And after that, Maharaj Prithu starts offering prayers. And Maharaj Prithu's prayers are glorious. If we study them deeply, they give us lots of insights and lots of inspiration for our own bhakti. So Maharaj Prithu glorifies the pastime, the quality of hearing. He says that anyone, O my Lord, who gets attached to hearing your pastimes and hearing your glories, he does not have to take birth in this material world again. And Maharaj Prithu, like we see Rupa Goswami, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was present, Rupa Goswami says a beautiful prayer. He says that, I wish I had hundreds and hundreds of years, because 2 years are not enough for me to hear your glories. So I desire for hundreds and millions of years so that I can hear your glories through all these years. And in the same way, we see a prayer repeated by Maharaj Prithu also over here. He also says, O Lord, give me hundreds of years so that I can hear and be satisfied by hearing all the glories of you through these hundreds of years. He also glorifies the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. He says that the dust of your feet is like the sweet nectar of saffron. Just as saffron particles, when you add to any dish, they, you know, impart a nectarian taste to that dish. So he says that the dust of your lotus feet are also like these saffron particles. And once they are spread, and once a devotee gets attached to this, the saffron particle like dust of your lotus feet. There is no going back for that devotee to this material world or to the miseries of this material world. And while offering these prayers, Maharaj Prithu gets so choked up that his voice starts faltering. So for some time he is completely silent. He is not able to say anything further. And it is also said that his eyes are full of tears. So he is not even able to see Lord Vishnu properly because of the ecstasy that he is feeling. And in those ecstatic moments, he is offering all these prayers to the Lord. And after Vishnu accepts all these prayers, he offers a benediction to Maharaj Prithu. He says that you ask me whatever you want. I'm happy to give you any benediction. Now, as we discussed Dhruv Maharaj's pastime also, Maharaj Prithu is also pure devotee and Dhruv Maharaj also gets purified by looking at the form of the Lord. So then Maharaj Prithu also does not ask for any material benediction. He says, just give me the association of devotees and give me pure devotional service if you do have to give me something. So this is how Maharaj Prithu concludes his prayers. And then Lord Vishnu is ready to depart. We see that in this verse, Lord Vishnu is about to depart to the spiritual sky. So in the previous few verses, it is said that Lord Vishnu, twice or thrice it is said, Lord Vishnu was about to depart, but then he stays back. He himself does not want to leave the association of Maharaj Prithu. He is so attracted and becomes attached to Maharaj Prithu. And why does that happen? Why does the Lord become so attracted and attached that he does not want to leave? He does not want to go back to the spiritual sky or to his abode. So that brings us to that, you know, quality of Maharaj Prithu, which we touched upon a little bit. That Maharaj Prithu actually cooperated with Lord Brahma and the higher and Lord Vishnu for a higher purpose. So we see Indra. Now we'll dwell on Indra and Maharaj Prithu's qualities and we'll see why the Lord was so attached to Maharaj Prithu. So Indra, he was trying to completely destroy the 100th horse sacrifice that was going to happen. He stole the sacrificial horse and he hid it somewhere so that Maharaj Prithu is not successful. And then when Maharaj Prithu's representatives try to go and get the horse back, Indra actually dresses up as a sannyasi, as a fake sannyasi. And he comes over there. So Indra was trying various means. And by his various means, he was doing nothing but establishing irreligious principles in this world. In fact, when he dresses up as that fake sannyasi and comes, Prabhupada explains in this purport that Indra is actually the propitiator or the person who started fake sannyas dharma in Kali Yuga. So in Kali Yuga, we see there are so many fake sannyasis, and it was Indra who started that whole culture of fake sannyasis or sannyasis who are putting on the dress of a sannyasi, but you know their motives are ulterior and they are not acting to take the citizen or to take people back to Godhead. So we see on one hand Indra doing all these things because he is extremely envious. He does not want anybody else to have the fame and the glory of being called as a completer of 100 horse sacrifices. So I was listening to a lecture by one of the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. And he was saying that why did Indra get this fear? So this fear comes in a person's heart when there is a lot of things he has to lose. But if we compare that to somebody who doesn't have to lose anything, then there is no fear in the heart of that person. And that person was giving the example, that Maharaj was giving the example of brahmacharis. And I'm sure, you know, our brahmacharis in this temple are glorious. So he said that these brahmacharis have very few possessions. So they might have a little locker or a small cupboard or something like that, but they will not always keep everything under lock and key and keep guarding their possessions. And why they don't spend their time doing that? Because there is no fear, there is not much possessions they have, so there is no fear of losing anything. In fact, you know, when the tsunami had come a few years ago, you know, the big tsunami that had destroyed so many coastal regions of the world. It was said that the tsunami could destroy places where there was lots of construction and lots of things which man had made. But the tsunami could not destroy anything where man had not touched that land. So for example, where there was nothing, tsunami couldn't destroy anything on that land. So, you know, the thing we are trying to understand over here is the more we have, there will be more destruction. The less we have, we won't be fearful of losing that thing. So Indra was not looking at the higher principle. He was acting on the principle of me, mine, my name, my fame, my glory. And because of that me and I and mine principle, envy had entered into his heart. and he had completely forgotten the higher purpose which demigods are meant to. So, Guru na sasyat, pita na sasyat. We know that verse from the Bhagavatam. Anybody who takes the position of a leader, ideally should guide that their dependence back to Godhead. Otherwise, they should not take the position of leadership. And Indra is the king of all the demigods. So he is the leader of the demigods. Instead of guiding everyone back to the path of Krishna, he is guiding people towards these things. He himself is envious. He himself gets into the clutches of the modes. And those modes then propel him to do all these irreligious activities that he was doing. Now, comparing Indra's quality like this, let's look at Maharaj Prithu. So when Maharaj Prithu was actually, because Maharaj Prithu was doing these sacrifices, he wanted to complete the 100 horse sacrifices for the welfare of his citizens, so that his citizens derive the benefit and the earth planet derives the benefit. So he was not doing it for name or fame. He did not want to be known as the only person who would have completed 100 horse sacrifices. He was doing it, his motives were not ulterior when he was doing that. So when he saw that someone was obstructing his service to the Lord, he was actually quite angry and he was going to chastise and arrest King Indra. But then Brahma appeared over there and Brahma requested him. Brahma told Prithu, Maharaj Prithu, that I understand that you want to do your 100th horse sacrifice for the satisfaction of the citizens and for the satisfaction of the Lord. But till now it's King Indra only who has been known as completing these 100 horse sacrifices. And he's quite attached to that name. So let him have the glory of being the only person who has done these 100 sacrifices. Let's not take that glory away from him. So I understand he's acting on the platform of envy. But Brahma then told Maharaj Prithu, but I'm calling upon your good qualities. So can you please leave that aside, that desire aside to complete the 100 horse sacrifices and be satisfied with the glories of having completed 99 horse sacrifices? That is what Brahma instructs Maharaj Prithu. And he says that will be very pleasing to the Lord if you give up, you take a back step back and you sacrifice that position and let Indra have that position. And Brahma also explains to Maharaj Prithu. He says that even though Indra is doing all these things and we know it's not right what he's doing, but still understand that he is a devotee of the Lord. He's a Kama Mishra Bhakta. He has all these desires, but still he's an empowered representative of the Lord. And let's not forget and, you know, put him to any further shame. So immediately Maharaj Prithu understands that he has to cooperate on this higher principle. So he understands Brahma's instructions on how we cooperate on a higher principle and we give up our own egoistic ideas to achieve the higher purpose of, you know, uniting in Krishna consciousness. So when Prabhupada also left this world, we know Prabhupada gave this instruction. He said that anything that can break ISKCON will not be external factors. The only thing that can break ISKCON will be internal factors. So internal quarrel and hypocrisy. And we see that in Kali Yuga, quarrel, Bhagavatam has proclaimed Kali Yuga is an age of quarrel and hypocrisy. So over little matters, we see in Kali Yuga that there are fights. Little matters, big matters. We see, you know, yesterday we heard His Holiness Devamrit Maharaj giving a nice class and he was saying, talking about the current situation between Pakistan and India and what's going on right now with that situation. So he was saying that everyone is acting on that principle of what I want. No one is understanding what is the higher purpose of, you know, uniting the citizens back to Godhead, leading a Krishna conscious life. You know, each country is trying to, you know, serve some means. So who is right, who is wrong, it's become a big political thing. But Devamrit Maharaj was trying to establish that fact. Like he was, you know, using children's example that children will always be limited by what they want. And, you know, if they feel that every day, you know, for breakfast, lunch, dinner, we should have bubble gum or sweets or something like that. So in the same way, we are also all limited by our conditioning, by our own desires. So Prabhupada says, you know, that the only way that y'all can cooperate or we can make ISKCON successful is when y'all cooperate on a higher principle. There is cooperation between all of y'all, keeping Krishna in the center. So even for little matters, you know, when we've seen the corporate world or even amongst devotees, if we are not keeping Krishna in the center and we are not thinking at every step of our life or every step that we take, that will my Guru and Krishna be pleased with this behavior of mine or will be pleased with what I'm thinking in my mind and what I'm planning to act on? Will my Guru and Krishna be pleased? So that is an introspection Prabhupada wanted all of us to do. Because even little things can create conflicts amongst devotees. And we see, like when Matajis make garlands, for example, even, you know, who got more flowers, who didn't get more flowers, or I should get these flowers, or why I didn't get the opportunity to do this. You know, all these little things can create so much conflicts amongst devotees. And that time, because we are thinking my garland should look the best, or my service should be the best, or I should be the best singer, or I am a good singer, but why was I not given a prime slot in the 24-hour, 12-hour kirtan? So, you know, all these things can preoccupy our minds. And sometimes when these things preoccupy our minds, the purpose for which we are, you know, doing this seva can go at the back. It can go take a back burner or a back seat. We sometimes might forget the purpose, that whom am I doing this seva for? It's for pleasing the Lord. But by, you know, having these conflicts over, let's say, flowers, or who got to do what service, who didn't get any recognition for some service, that whole purpose takes a back seat. So Jagatarani Mataji was actually saying in one of the classes, she was saying that unless we have param drishtva nivartate, unless we have a higher taste and we absorb ourselves in Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing the glories of the Lord, chanting our rounds nicely, all these little problems will appear very big in our life. So she was giving the example of an elevator, and I've mentioned this in one of my classes as well. She was saying that if you are in a glass elevator, and you're riding up from, you know, some glass elevators are outside buildings, like we see in shopping centers and all, they have elevators outside the building which takes you up, and it's a glass elevator. So she was saying when the elevator is on the ground floor, we can see people, cars, everything appears the normal size. They appear quite big. But as soon as the elevator starts going up, and, you know, when you reach, let's say, the fifth floor, then these same cars which were appearing so big will start appearing a little small. And then you reach the 10th floor. So they are appearing still smaller when you're looking down on the ground. And by the time you reach, let's say, the 20th, 30th floor, or maybe the 40th, 50th, whatever, those cars and the same people have become tiny specks. They have become little dots on the ground. So she was saying that getting, you know, absorbing ourselves in the Bhagavatam and absorbing ourselves in hearing, especially hearing about Lord Krishna and chanting, is like riding the elevator. So the problems which were appearing very big in our life, if we take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam and we are very absorbed in the Bhagavatam and, you know, hearing and chanting, it's like taking the elevator up. So our consciousness goes on a high, it goes, rides up on that elevator. And then at that time, because we are developing this higher taste and absorption in Krishna, all those problems which are appearing so big in our life, they will start appearing small. And I have myself experienced in my life, if I am not taking enough shelter of the holy name and not reading regularly or hearing regularly, you know, any office problem or even little problem which might be there amongst devotees or relationships will be appearing so big, and I will feel, oh, I have to tackle this problem. Why is this problem coming? Like, you get so absorbed in that whole problem that we forget to take shelter of Krishna. But as soon as we take a step back and we realize that, you know, these problems are really possessing me right now, like Indra was completely possessed that I have to be the only person who should have the fame of doing the 100 horse sacrifices. So because that whole idea had possessed him, he was not able to go higher and see the purpose of doing the sacrifices, which is satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. He forgot to see that by his behavior towards Maharaj Prithu, the whole purpose, you know, of satisfying Lord Krishna through the sacrifices, will the Lord be satisfied? He forgot that purpose and he just got completely absorbed in solving that problem of him only being the only one who would do the 100 horse sacrifices. So in our own life, in my life, I see if I'm not taking enough shelter and not hearing the Bhagavatam regularly, I will see that the problems become so big and I'm completely swept away by those problems. So Maharaj Prithu is showing us by his example, and Prabhupada comments and the Acharyas tell us that the more we cooperate with each other for this higher principle of Krishna consciousness, every time bringing a focus back that yes, is my Guru pleased, is Krishna pleased, is Prabhupada pleased with this behavior or with what I'm about to say or about to act. And once we bring that focus back, then we will not be having those conflicts in our relationships with devotees or conflicts or even those big material problems that come in our life. And seeing this quality of Maharaj Prithu, that he was ready to sacrifice everything just to cooperate with Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu. So seeing that quality of Maharaj Prithu, Lord Vishnu personally appeared over there to bless him. And in fact, Vishnu had brought Indra with him. And he had mildly rebuked Indra also for, you know, doing like this. Just as we see in Govardhan Leela, he had rebuked. But Indra does not learn his lesson. In the fourth canto, he got rebuked by Vishnu, but again he repeats it, you know, in the later cantos as well. So Maharaj Prithu brings Indra with him and he gives personal darshan to, Lord Vishnu brings Indra with him and he gives personal darshan to Maharaj Prithu only because he's extremely satisfied with this behavior of Maharaj Prithu, where he accepted to sacrifice his fame of getting those 100, doing those 100 horse sacrifices. He took a step back and he cooperated with his higher authorities so that the Lord is pleased. So because of that quality of Maharaj Prithu, he attracted Vishnu. Not only attracted Lord Vishnu was not ready to leave his association and go back. So imagine if we also try to follow in the footsteps of what the Bhagavatam is teaching us through examples like Maharaj Prithu, how much will the Lord be pleased with our own devotional service, where we take a step back and we are ready to sacrifice for a higher principle. So these are some of the lessons which are coming out from today's verse. And I'll end the class here. And if there's any questions, comments, corrections, additions, which anybody wants to do. I didn't hear the last part, Prabhu, sorry.
Like the scripture says when the Lord appears at this particular time. So is that a law that's bounding the Lord?
Is there a law that is bounding the Lord? Is that your question? Good question. So the question is that we were mentioning about how the Lord is Achyuta. He's infallible and he's not bound by the material modes or Maya when he comes down to this world. But we also see the scriptures predict when the Lord is going to appear. So is he bound by any laws? So Prabhupada explains in his purports, and I'm sure you know it, Prabhuji, but I'll just try to give my own, what I've read in Prabhupada's purports. Prabhupada says that it's like when this, you know, the chairman of a company, when he's, you know, chairmen usually are not involved in the day-to-day affairs of the running of a company. It's the CEO and the board of directors who are generally involved in the day-to-day running of the company. But one day the chairman decides to visit the company. So he might come and, you know, in India we have security guards and all those people standing, especially if the company has some high, like confidential things or secret things which are happening. So then when that chairman comes and he tries to walk in, the security guard might not recognize him and he might not allow him to go in. So Prabhupada says that even when the chairman wants to visit his own company, he will go through the proper process. So he will, for example, make an appointment. He will tell the CEO or whoever is responsible to take him in to show him around or whatever. He will make an appointment. Then that CEO will, you know, arrange with the guards or whoever is there to arrange for his access to come inside the company. So even the chairman follows these rules. Or, you know, for example, when a president is about, let's say, you know, the prime minister or the chief minister of a state wants to visit the jail or something like that, just to, you know, cheer up the criminals or something on Independence Day or something. So then he also makes an appointment and he goes. There are some protocols which the jail will have, which a company would have. So the chairman or the chief minister, whoever are about to visit, they will follow the protocols of that jail or the company when they visit that place. So it's like that. When Krishna comes in this world, he will follow the protocols of this world. And he will do that so that there are two purposes. He doesn't want to transgress the laws which he himself has set. And the second purpose is that he's also then, you know, avoiding people claiming that they are Lord. Just because the Lord is coming and he is Achyuta and he can come in any way. So in the same way, I am also Lord. So that is why he wants that everything what he does is documented, like we say in corporate life. It's documented. So it's documented in the Bhagavatam, in the pages of Bhagavatam, when he will appear, so that the people are not cheated by fake avatars. So that's the second purpose why the Lord does this, so that there are no fake people who will start claiming. And Prabhupada is quite heavy. Like, you know, we know in, right now it's happening, a few years ago also in India, there are few people who are claiming they are Kalki avatars. In fact, there was a show which someone had organized and they brought all those Kalki avatars on that show, whoever is claiming they are Kalki avatars. And then they said, now each of you prove which one of you is Kalki avatar. Have a debate and prove which one of you out of all of you is Kalki avatar. But we know when Kalki avatar will appear. The scriptures have told us. So right now there is no time for Kalki avatar to appear. There's still, you know, hundreds and thousands of years left for Kalki avatar to appear. So if the scriptures, you know, hadn't documented this, and if the Lord did not follow that, after he is only establishing these laws, but if he did not follow that, then we will have, you know, big sprouts of all these people coming and claiming that I am an avatar. So now Prabhupada says that if somebody claims like that, go and challenge them from the scriptures. That is your avatar or is your incarnation documented in this book? But it's not. So we know that they are a fake avatar. So it also creates like a checkpoint for us to, for people in general to know whether it's a real avatar or a fake avatar. So that's my understanding, Prabhuji.
We talked about Krishna being all attractive, but why Krishna was here for 125 years and there's so many people who are not attracted to him at all.
So we understand that Krishna is all attractive and his name also means all attractive, but when he was present for 125 years, there were so many people who weren't attracted to him. And the classic example being Duryodhan. So Lord Krishna was personally present in his assembly, tried to be go as a peace messenger, but Duryodhan, he could not attract Duryodhan's heart. So again, Prabhupada explains in the purports that even when Krishna is present, it is, he still follows the principle of free will. And also, ye yatha mam prapadyante. So he absolutely does not interfere in the free will of a person. So if a person, because of his past activities or because of his constitutional position, conditional nature that he has in the, in his present birth, he is not exercising his free will to surrender to the Lord or get attracted by the Lord, then the Lord is, you know, he will not find the features of the Lord very attractive. You know, like, for example, we take the deity form of the Lord. Now, because devotees are on the path of bhakti and their heart is getting purified slowly by following the process of the bhakti, then these deities appear very attractive to us. But if you bring anyone from outside, any, you know, materialist who is not following anything from outside, he might find these strange statues. He might not find these deities to be attractive. So Krishna, on one hand, does not interfere with our free will. He will never force, like a loving father, he will never force anybody to love him. And the second thing is that ye yatha mam prapadyante. So Krishna is there, but he will reciprocate according to the surrender and according to the desire of the person who is surrendering to him. So because the Pandavas were pure devotees of the Lord, the Lord was also reciprocating with them and, you know, he was very attractive to them. But with Duryodhana, there was no, and that is why we know he rejected the whole feast of Duryodhana but went to Vidura to accept those banana peels from Vidura. So these are the two reasons, like, Lord does not interfere with the free will and also it's, he reciprocates to the extent that a person surrenders to him. That's my understanding from you. Any other questions, comments? It's beyond my this thing to answer, but I'll attempt, Prabhuji. So the question is that we were talking about, you know, how devotional service, if we cooperate for a higher purpose or we have, you know, we do devotional service, then the anarthas will go away, like envy and all that. But how to get that higher taste? Because we do, when we do our devotional service, we sometimes get that competitive tendencies of being the best or something like that. So Prabhupada talks about the example of jaundice in many of his purports. So he says that a person who is jaundiced, the cure is sugar candy. So when he is taking the sugar candy, initially even sugar candy tastes bitter for that person. But still that person should keep taking sugar candy so that his jaundice will eventually get cured. And when the jaundice starts getting cured, he will start getting that taste of the sugar candy. So in the same way, we are doing devotional service, and we obviously we are on the path of devotional service. We haven't yet perfected the path of devotional service. So it is like, you know, that bitter taste of the sugar candy. We are not realizing the full benefits of the devotional service that we are doing, but it is definitely acting on us. Just as the sugar candy is acting on the person and it's helping him get out of that jaundice condition. So in the same way, definitely the process of devotional service that we are doing is definitely acting on us. So one thing is, yes, keep doing the process of devotional service. And sometimes, you know, Prabhupada also says, fake it till you make it. So we might not have an attraction to certain aspect of devotional service, but we keep doing it till we develop that taste. So that is one aspect which will help us to then keep going on. And as we keep going on with our devotional service, definitely that day will come where, you know, we start getting rid of our anarthas. And the second solution which Prabhupada offers in his purports is, whatever anartha we are feeling, like let's say I'm not having enough taste for my chanting, then I look for devotees who have a very high taste in chanting, and I try to take more of their association. Or let's say I'm struggling with the anartha of pride or competitiveness, like you were mentioning, that I want to be the best at something. Then I look at some other devotees and I identify which devotee is, you know, not having so much problem with that particular quality. And I try and take their association more, and I try and seek guidance from them that I'm facing this. So what are the practical ways in which I come out of this anartha? So it's also, you know, identifying somebody. I don't have expertise in book distribution, but I do have a desire. Or I don't have strong desire also, but I want to do it because it pleases Prabhupada. Then I, you know, go ahead and identify devotees who are very good in that particular seva and try to get inspiration from them on how to overcome that lack of expertise that I have in book distribution. So that is another solution. Keep going with our devotional service, because we know that is it will destroy all anarthas in the heart. It is like the sunlight which destroys everything. When the sun rises, all the putrid odors that are there in the world, it destroys. So in the same way, devotional service will definitely uproot every desire or every anartha that we have in our heart. But also on a day-to-day or practical level, we associate with devotees who are, to some extent, more extent than us, free from that anartha, and take guidance from them. That's one of the things. Anything else? So we'll end the class here. Granthraj. Oh, Mataji, you had a question? Thank you so much for your encouragement, Mataji. Again, by learning from lots of senior devotees, they are so much, such a big inspiration. So. Thank you for your encouragement, Mataji. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.